Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv S. Khanna, PC. Today is Thursday, April 1st, the All Fools Day, 2010. And this call is being recorded. Anybody who does not wish their voice to be recorded should hang up now. If you talk with me, please keep your identity confidential. This call is being recorded in open forum. Everybody would know who you are. You can just make up a name if you want to talk with me. The call is a community convenience and information dispersal call. It does not mean you hired us or that we have agreed to represent you, so there are no obligations either way. We try our best to answer the questions to the best of our ability. You cannot hold us responsible for any advice which is inaccurate. The standard disclaimers apply. Coming back to what I was talking about just before I started recording, I said if you guys are on the forums homepage, forum.immigration.com, and you click on home in the top ribbon, you'll see I have started collecting all the articles from my blog under notable content. To the left we have sections and below that categories. I'm hoping to be able to categorize all our information, including community stories. You know, people have posted so many good experiences, etc. I am hoping, with the help of the volunteer moderators as well as our own editorial team, we'll be able to categorize all this content under these broad categories. So basically, the new forum interface is being filled out now. I started working on it today this morning. As I was also commenting, I've had no time with all these new rules and new things going on with the USCIS. We've been struggling hard to keep up everybody's compliance issues. Most of the 6 months have gone towards compliance issues. So many H-1 issues, so many green card issues. With that said, I'm going to put everybody on mute now. I will answer the questions that have already been posted. I believe I'm going to have sufficient time to take new questions, at least 15, 20 minutes towards the end of this call. Anybody has any comments before I get started? Okay, very good. I will get started now. The questions that were posted. The first question is from Smish. Currently on F1, applied for 485 through marriage. So this gentleman is entitled to an F1 OPT as well as a 485 through marriage, EAD. So the question is, which EAD should I go for? Is there a third option? So a few documents were missing, graduating in May, it's almost April. Well, look, I know that USCIS usually does not issue two EADs, okay? But since OPT and 485-based EAD are so far apart in purpose, I think there is no harm in applying for an OPT. Okay, EAD processing should not take more than 90 days, usually. And if you have problems, you can actually enlist the help of a congressman's office. If you don't know how to do that, just go to immigration.com and do a search for the word congressman. You should pull up the article where I have explained in detail, including links, on how to get to your congressman, okay? So go to immigration.com. Under search, there is a search on immigration.com. Just do a search for congressman, C-O-N-G-R-E-S-S-M-A-N, M-A-N, okay? Zozo 000 says, I don't think I can get unemployment while on EAD, and the answer is I think you can, okay? It depends upon the type of EAD, but if you have a 485-based EAD, I don't see any problem with taking unemployment because it's not really, at least as far as I know, if you guys hear something different, let me know. Unemployment insurance is a private insurance which the employer pays into. So if you take benefit of that, I don't see any problem with it. You can have trouble taking the benefit under H-1 and L-1 because that is tied into your employment, and unemployment is not tied in to work. But on EAD, which is based upon 485, I don't see any problem taking unemployment insurance. Of course, whether or not you can be without a job is a separate issue. And if you want to know more about this topic, I think I have some information posted on my blog, what happens if you are in between jobs on 485. Go to my blog and look under employees' rights category, okay? Next question is Fruity Bar. Fruity Bar wants to know, my H-1 expires in November. Employer will soon be applying for my I-140. Do I need H-1? Yes, of course you need an H-1. Having an I-140 alone does not give you work authorization. You've got to have an EAD or an H-1. And I prefer that you have an H-1. And the reason for that is also explained on my blog, why I prefer that people have H-1 instead of EAD. You can look under the category of I-485 or AOS information, or even under employee rights, I think. But I think, I'm pretty sure I have an article on this, why I prefer to have H-1 active. Okay, so yes, you do need H-1. Next question is AJR7. My wife is on H-1B from 2008, but she never works. After 10 months, and I'm assuming that, you know, she got change of status here. So she went back to India due to a personal emergency. After 4 months, she returned back on H-1B. You see, that can be a problem. USCIS could say that that entry was fraudulent because she's not on H-1. Okay. Well, you did it unknowingly. So it's probably not going to be fraud, I hope. I-97 expires October 2010. See, she's out of status. There's no question about that. You asked me whether she's in status. She's definitely out of status, and I think the only good way to get her back into status is for her to go outside USA, get a visa stamp, whether on H-4 or a new H-1, and come back. I think coming back on H-4 is the better option for her. Okay? She cannot do it within USA because she's out of status. And she should leave as quickly as possible, get her H-4 stamping, and come back. Okay? And going to home country is the best thing to do. Next question, EMGK. Oh, by the way, for the H-4 person, also remember that they are deportable. Because they are not maintaining status. If USCIS so chooses, they can deport her, and then she can't come back for 5 years. Next question, EMGK, H-1B portability when extension request is pending. This is what I understood this question to be. I had read it before. Person is working for company A, I-94 expired. Extension request is pending. Can I transfer my H-1B to another employer? Yes, you can, but here's the problem. If the H-1B extension for company A is denied, then you are out of status. When USCIS does approve your H-1 to company B, you will have to go outside USA to get visa stamping before you can start working. There is also a question of unauthorized stay. Oh, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Unlawful presence in the United States. Keep that in mind, because if your I-94 has expired and the earlier extension application is declined or withdrawn, you start accruing unlawful presence right away. You want to read more about unlawful presence, go to my blog, read the article I have on unlawful presence. I think you should be able to do a search for the word unlawful presence in advanced search and pull out the article. Okay. I'll also, of course, as I am building the home page of the discussion forums, you will find some of the articles that I feel are more important prominently highlighted. Okay. So that is the risk, and I know about the Yates memorandum that you talked about. If I'm missing some points that you made, go ahead and, you know, at the end of this conversation, I will, at the end of answering all my questions, I will then open the call to people who have posted questions. You can ask me further questions on this. Next question, Ms. S-Y-S-U-N, M-S-S-Y-S-U-N, H-1 stamping versus returning on advanced parole. Neeluji is a physician who came to USA in 1999 on B-2 and changed to F-1. And you know, that's always a problem. When you change from B visa to F-1, USCIS, well, let me rephrase that. Consulate can raise an issue that your entry on B-2 was fraudulent because you had a preconceived intention of changing to a much longer length visa. So they can always create a problem about that. Now that you have an H-1 stamping issue, the question is, if you go back, are they going to create a problem? The answer is maybe. Nobody knows the answer to this question. I know at least one person who did not have any problems. But I also know one person who did have a problem. But when you have an AP, you can always travel back on AP and you would still be on H-1. Read Cronin Memorandum, C-R-O-N-I-N. C Charlie, R O, N as in Nancy, I N as in Nancy. Cronin Memorandum. It is available on forums. So if you do a search for Cronin on forums, you should pull up the article that I have written on this as well as Cronin Memorandum. So you will be on H1 even if you come back on AP. Okay. What other precautions do I need to take? I can't think of any other precautions. Just make sure if you are asked any questions by the consulate, you answer it truthfully. Next question, Adil 101, currently hold a conditional green card. Their question is, my wife is threatening to revoke my green card through marriage. If I leave, can they revoke green card in my absence? The answer is no. Once the green card is given, unless there is some active fraud investigated by USCIS, I don't see how your spouse can revoke it. As long as the marriage was entered into in good faith when initially done. Okay? Initially, when you entered into a marriage with her, it wasn't done for any inappropriate purposes. Eventually, you should get your green card. I would suggest very strongly, read the instructions on the form. I forget the name of the form. I think it's I-751. 751, is that? Or is that? Yeah, 751, yeah. Read the instructions on I-751. It tells you what you need to do to remove the condition. And also what to do if your spouse is not joining you in this. Okay? So I don't see any problem with brief travel outside USA as long as there are no indicia of fraud. Next question, C-A-N-N-A, Canna. I have a few questions regarding my H-1B petition. Entered with F-1 visa, completed master's, applied H-1, got it approved, then worked on H-1 for a couple of months, went to India for vacation, went for stamping. That H-1 has now been in review for a year. Okay. Now I return back to USA on H-4 visa. So H-1 investigation is still going on. You came back on H-4 visa. If I apply for fresh H-1, can I start working as soon as I get my H-1 approval? There are two schools of thought on this, as far as I know, and I'm not sure there is a resolution on this. One group of attorneys seem to think that if you have ever had an H-1, ever, you can start working, even though you are now on H-4 status, as soon as your H-1 is applied for. The other group of attorneys, which I am a member of, which I feel is a more conservative view, and of course, I have not seen anything from USCIS in writing so far on this. If you folks know of any such thing, let me know. I am of the opinion that it's safer to assume that you can start working only if you are currently on H-1, maintaining status. Actually, there is a Vermont Service Center opinion that says even if you are out of status, you may be able to use portability. That's a very lengthy discussion. I don't want to get into it. But generally speaking, if you were on H-1 earlier, then you went on H-4, now you apply for H-1, I think you should not start working until the H-1 is actually approved. Okay? And there are practical reasons for that as well. You should talk to your H-1 lawyer, see what they suggest. Can I reapply for my old H-1? I'm not sure what you mean by that, I guess. If you're talking about extension, I don't know what the grounds for the investigation were. It certainly appears to be the cleaner option to just apply from a new employer. Can I do a change of status from H-4 to F-1? Sure, I don't see why not. Can I do it, change of status to H-1 and F-1 at the same time? You can, but the problem is, whatever is approved last would be probably considered to be your status. So if you get H-1 approval today and then you get F-1 approval tomorrow, INS could hold you to F-1 status. Okay? There are a lot of finer details in this that I cannot get into, but a lot of things can happen when you have two filings going on. It can be done, but you can do it carefully. Okay? Talk to your H-1 lawyers. H-1B Singh wants to know about I-140 interfiling. I remember reading your question, and if I remember correctly, the problem is this. You had a pending I-140, then you have a second I-140. With the pending I-140, you had attached the I-485. The pending I-140 got denied. Now your question is, can I tack on my existing I-140, my second I-140 to the pending 485? And if I remember correctly, USCIS said yes, as long as you do it before the old I-140 is denied. Because if the old I-140 is denied, then the concurrently filed 485 is automatically gone. If, however, you win the appeal, then that 485 will also be reinstated, then you can tack on a new I-140 to it. But if before tacking on a new I-140, the old I-140 is revoked, they may not allow you to attach the I-485 to it. Okay? So I think that's your question, but let me run through it real quickly. Concurrently filed 45 I-140 pending. There was an RFC. We replied. Case was denied a few days back. Meanwhile, with the same employer, we saw another LC, another I-140. Before the concurrently filed I-140 was denied, we sent a letter to USCIS to interlink. You should be successful because you sent in your request before the old I-140 was denied. Okay? So, my questions are, will my I-485 be denied soon? If it is, you can file a motion to reopen based upon your request that was filed earlier than the denial of the old I-140. Is there any way to find out if my approval is linked? You need to call USCIS. Should I file MTR or appeal for the denied I-140? Appeal. I-140 should be appealed, not just MTR. Will appeal or MTR help my I-485 only if the appeal is successful? Since my I-140 is denied, is the original LC still valid? Can I file another I-140? Yes, you can. You can still file another I-140 based upon the original LC. The unusual situation in my case is I'm trying to port from EB3 professional to EB3 skilled. Yeah, we've had to do that for many cases for which we were hired. Sometimes either due to ignorance or omission. Look, mistakes can happen. We make mistakes too. Sometimes lawyers can make mistakes because there's so many details we have to worry about. Although in our own office, we do a review of every application 3 to 5 times through different hands. You know, supervisor, me, case manager, another case manager. We can still make mistakes. So through whatever mistakes, this can happen. And we have to go through skilled category. And that's also common because it's still ED3 category. Interfiling. Okay, well, that's pretty much it. I don't have anything else to add to that. Next question is YR3645, a visa problem for my daughter to return to USA. In this case, what has happened is daughter went to India in 2008. She was on H4. She had a valid advance parole. Now the advance parole is gone, and dad does not have an H1. How do we bring her back? Well, that's a big problem. I think the only way you can bring her back is going to H1 status and bringing her back on H4. It's not dad. I think it's mom. So I don't know of any other way of doing this. Because the problem is, if we do a bottom-up analysis, what is the bottom line? If she cannot come on H4 or advance parole, she can't get an advance parole if she's outside US. If she cannot come back on H4, her 485 is deemed to be abandoned. Then you have two choices. Bring her in at some point on H4 and refile the 485 if the priority date is current, or do her consular processing as following to join. Which you can do outside USA after you get your green card. Okay? So H4 is the only way I know. Consultant 007. I-140 refiled question. I-485 pending and recently received AP for travel. I-140 was denied. Appeal pending, 485 pending. It was sent to AAO review. Maintaining H1 currently, have EAD and AP. You see, the problem is if I-140 is denied, then EAD and AP, I think, are gone. Even if you have not received any particular information from USCIS, it is best to assume that. I-140 was denied in error. Lawyer said that we have a very good chance of getting a successful appeal. Now the company has refiled I-140. If they approve my refiled I-140, do I need to withdraw the I-140 appeal, and can I have my 45 pending or not? I don't think you can have your 45 pending, although you can try. If it is a service error, you could try, but I don't think it's going to happen. Number two, on the internet it says if the I-140 was denied an error and refiled I-140 is approved, sometimes I-45 will be kept pending. I don't know of any settled policy on this issue, but you can try. I think actually USCIS is likely to decline to reopen the 485 if that I-140 which was first filed with it was not approved, whether originally or in appeal. But you can try. I recently filed for AP, received the approval. That's weird. I'm maintaining H1 as well. So if I use AP for travel, will there be any issues at port of entry? I think you should get an H1 visa stamping. I have my very grave doubts about the survivability of that 485 in the absence of an approved appeal. A Vermont girl wants to know, why is my I-130 being processed in one service center, whereas mother is based in Vermont in another service center. So she wants to know, what the central distribution center of Chicago Inland bases their decision on which service center to send an application to. You know what? I don't know. It's been a while since I got involved with something that nitty-gritty details. If my case gets transferred to Vermont, will it start at the bottom of the pile? No. No. It is always in accordance with your filing date. It's in accordance with your filing date. By the way, why do you worry? Because the category that you applied for is so backed up several years, even if the case gets processed early, it doesn't help you much. Okay? So I'm not sure how that helps you. But you can always call USCIS directly. Usually, these basic questions, their information should be able to handle. KRMANID, which is money. Money says, thank you for answering questions. I finally decided to cancel my I-140 and go for change of status. I need to explain why I'm opting for change of status and not going for stamping. I have no idea, sir. I've never heard of that. That you have to explain your preference for change of status. Secondly, do I have to resign the day I receive my COS? Yes. Yes. Because the day you receive your COS, you are no longer an H-1. Next question, which shine? Eligibility for O-1 visa. Background in fashion design. So it's always good to see people in various areas of endeavor, not just, you know, sciences, mathematics, medicine, etc. I'm always happy to see our people, the immigration community, doing well in other areas. Okay, so you've been featured as a designer in a city edition of Indian Express. Very good. I have written fashion-related articles for a vernacular newspaper. Currently working on some business of fashion and brand. It does not look like an O-1 visa, but you know, you never know. Can the articles written by me published in the magazine be considered as scholarly publications? No, I don't think so. How about the high salary? It means way above average, ma'am. Way above average. In general, I guess for a particular city or demographic, you can take it both ways. So you have to establish a baseline of what other designers get paid and then show that how you get paid a lot more. Some people do it through letters from experts in the field. Some people just go to occupational employment surveys, OES, things like that. Okay, but this does not look like an easy O-1 case for me. To me, okay. Next question, Ebony 007. It's amazing how many people have 007, huh? I'm currently on B2 visa, got married to an American husband. I don't have a social security number. Initial interview happened. We were separated, asked the same question. So you went through Stokes interview. The interview went on fine, but they were supposed to mail us back in 2 weeks. Before the interview, we had to move out of our apartment. You see, all these problems, as long as you have sufficient explanation, you should be okay. Okay, you should be okay. As long as your case is genuine, ultimately you should prevail. Is it possible for them to check if we truly live in the address we gave them? I don't know, ma'am. If they get suspicious, they certainly will check. And normally they'll send you some kind of a request for evidence that says we intend to deny your case, or they'll send you a notice of intent to deny, giving you 30 days to respond. So, you know, I don't know what is going to happen. They can do it. They can do an investigation. What they will actually do, I don't know. It depends upon the degree of suspicion they have. Next question, people see POE entry question for H-1B visa holder. I have a friend and his family coming to U.S. after 9 months of H-1 stamping. He's coming to IAD airport. Will family members face any issues? Well, if you go to forums.immigration.com and click on the top ribbon where it says home, you'll see an article I have posted about entering USA and what those problems were. I can't predict what's going to happen. Of course, they are welcome to call us if they run into any problems, like you said. Can I get help by seeking your services? Sure. Tell them to call us if there's a problem. And if you just call either our Stanton or Arlington office and just say, you know, we have an emergency of some kind, they'll always find me. My office knows how to find me at all times. So I should be able to get back with you within a few minutes. Or somebody from my office, one of my other colleagues, will be able to get back with you. Okay. But it's hard for me to predict how it's going to work out. It appears that the problems lasted only a couple of days, that too at New Jersey, Newark Airport, and they were mostly complaint-related. Apparently, there were some companies about whom complaints had been lodged. Rockon321 wants to know what to do with an H-1B transfer petition, which is in background check. Should I file a writ of mandamus? Well, it doesn't hurt. I don't see why not. Well, let me not say that. It could hurt because in many of the mandamus cases, it has been the practice of USCIS when sued to send a follow-up RFE with a gazillion questions. And normally courts don't like to interfere with background security checks. However, when things get unreasonable, you should talk with a local lawyer. A case like this from D.C., it's hard for me to say whether it's going to work out or not. But from your local jurisdiction where the H-1 employer is or where the job is, you might be able to get some relief from courts on this. Okay? Do I recommend to file a writ of mandamus? It depends upon how desperate you are. Okay, I would do it if I'm completely sick and tired of it. I would just go ahead and file a writ of mandamus. Because remember, writ of mandamus can get you an early adjudication. It may not necessarily get you a favorable one. It might get you a denial instead. Also, if I do another transfer to company C, do I need to use company A petition or company B receipt notice? You know, what I would do is, if I did a transfer to another company, I would just go for consular processing. Okay. I don't see any problem with it. Also, will company C petition fall under quota? No. If you had an H-1 before, it should not fall under quota. Next question, ACV 207. L1 I-94 expiration date approaching in April 2010. The first L1 visa accession. Due to severe injury, I had to undergo surgery. Doctor has scheduled second part of the surgery in May, which is crossing my visa I-94 expiration date. I don't see any issues. When you have a medical necessity, as long as you can document it to the government, you should be able to get your L1 extension. Okay? Sahani Maninder. Change of jobs after I-140 approval and or H-1B extension on the basis of I-140 approval. I am in my fifth year of H-1B, expiring 2011. Current employer has firm approved in EB-3, also I-140 approved. They have filed for an H-1B extension. I'm still waiting. My question, if my H-1B extension has been filed by my current employer on the basis of I-140 approval, can I get another job with a new company and transfer my H-1B? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Even though the I-140 was approved by the current employer, another employer can file for your H-1. Can I switch the job before the H-1B extension approval? I would not recommend it, because if the old employer withdraws the I-140, then USCIS is not going to give you an H-1B extension beyond the time that you already have. Can the I-140 be ported? No. If they revoke your I-140, you can't do anything. But you can carry the priority date even if they revoke the I-140 as far as I can see. Can the I-140 be ported? No. If my new employer is ready to file green card for me in EB-2, what would be the process? You have to go through the firm process again. That's the way it works. Folks, I was able to answer all the questions that I saw. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put us in question-answer mode. Anybody who wants to speak with me, they can talk with me, but remember, I will first like to talk with only those people who have posted questions already. So press *6 to speak with me, *6. Press *6 on your phone to speak with me.
Hi, Rajay. Yeah, Raj. This is AJ.
Yes, AJ.
Can I refer to question number 5 for my next question?
What was the question? Remind me.
So my wife was on H1 from 2008.
Yeah, she went outside USA, came back on H1. She's never worked. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So now she is getting some interviews. So should you recommend she's staying here for a couple of months, like 3 or 4 months, and try getting a job?
I'm concerned because she's deportable. I would rather she go outside USA, come back on H4, and then start interviewing.
And that's one more question. While going for the H4 stamping, can there be any issue because she was in H1 and not working?
I don't think having been out of status is a ground for denial of H4. She's only been out of status. So I don't see any problem with it. We've had cases like this many, many times before. Just make sure that she does not in any way misrepresent to the consulate any questions that they ask her. She should be truthful. That's all.
Okay. Thanks, Rajiv.
Good luck. Next question, folks.
Hi, Rajiv. This is regarding this question related to the visa problem for my daughter to return to U.S.
Yes, yes, I remember. She's outside, no advance parole, H-4 not available. You are not on H-1.
Yes, so I'm currently an EAD and going back to H1 is a big problem for me because I'm working as a full-time employer for
Then the only option for you, sir, is to wait until your green card is approved and then have her process as following to join. You can send in Form I-824 for following to join now. That's the only other option. I don't know of a third option.
Okay, so I can come again on that?
Yeah. The other option is for her to continue to stay outside USA.
Okay.
And when you get your green card, she will get following to join if you file Form I-824. Do some research on following to join. The idea is she will be interviewed for her green card in the consulate in India about 6-8 months after you get your green card in USA.
Okay. So the form is I-824, right?
Yes.
Okay. And is there any way I can get her an exchange visa or something like that? I mean, if I can...
Unlikely, but not impossible.
Can I give a shot? Can I give a try?
Yeah, but if she enters on B1, B2, her 45 is deemed to have been abandoned.
Okay, I mean, then, I don't mind, because once I get my green card, I can then apply her.
Then might as well withdraw her 485 and then let her apply for a B1, B2.
Is that possible, withdrawal of 485?
Yeah, I guess so. Why not? That's her choice, your choice.
Oh, okay. Then I would like to talk more on this.
No, there is not much to say. You don't have to make a private call to me. There's no need for you to do that.
Okay.
I'm not going to add much to it. You know, I don't want to charge you for something that I can do free for you. Bottom line is this. By withdrawing her 485, you improve her chances of getting a tourist visa, although not drastically, maybe 5-10% improvement in her chances. Okay? So, you know, if you are sure that you are never going to be able to get an H-1, so she can't come in, her 45 is already gone anyway, might as well withdraw it, and then show it to the consulate as proof that she is no longer going to do any 485 type of deal here.
Okay.
I hope that they give her the tourist visa.
Okay, if the tourist visa is rejected, okay, if it's denied, and what are the options for her?
Not very many then. I'm afraid she'll have to wait for her green card.
Okay, so I have to apply and take a green card for her green card after I get my green card.
You would know. Don't do that. You do following to join.
Oh, okay.
If you apply for her separately, that will take 7 years.
Oh, okay. So even if the visa is denied, after I get my green card,
she's still entitled to following to join. Yes, sir.
And how much time would that take, Rajesh?
A few months extra, as long as the priority date remains current. Basically, what happens is that I-824 causes USCIS to send information about your green card approval and your daughter's relationship to you to the National Visa Center in New Hampshire, who then creates the file and sends it to the U.S. consulate closest to her place of residence, who then calls her for an interview. I've given you a very rough overview of the process.
Oh, okay, sure. Okay, great. So,
and that takes about 6-8 months after you get your green card approval.
Oh, okay, great. So I think this would be a better thing for me. So I'll withdraw the 485 and apply a visa.
I would love to see you get an H1 and have her come back on H4.
Oh, know, but you might be knowing the situation right now for H1.
Well, what is the harm in trying? You know, think about this seriously.
My current employer will not apply H1 for me. So I'm working on EAD. So I have to go to a different employer to get an H1 again.
Okay.
So
if that is so, then unless you can do an AC21 portability to another employer and do an H1 through them also, I think it's not a good idea for you to do an H1 through another employer.
It's not a good idea to go for the H1 for another.
Not unless you are doing an AC21 portability.
Okay, then I think I'll try with drawing 485 and then get a maintenance visa.
I wish you the very best of luck, sir.
Okay, if you get a visa and after I get a green card, I can still go file for I-84.
Yes, you can. You should file for I-824 even now, actually. So that when your green card gets approved, the I-824 gets sent, the information gets sent to the consulate right away.
But again, right now 485 is still pending, right?
Yeah, I think you can still file 824. USCIS has flip-flopped on this, whether you can file 824 while the case is pending, priority date is not current. I think the current thinking is you can file.
I still don't know, like, what is the current status of the 485? Is this already abandoned or, like, is it still pending?
Well, it will be considered to be abandoned as soon as they find out about it.
Just recently, I sent an AR-11 form for her as well. Like, so I'm not sure what.
No. That. As far as I know, okay, I'm not God. I'm just a human being. I think I know a lot of law, but I don't know everything about everything. But as far as I know, it is gone. It's just a question of not having been discovered so far.
So I need to renew my EAD and advance payroll sometime 2 or 3 months later. So I should be doing it only for myself and my wife, right? And in
yeah, what is the point of doing it for her? She's outside USA. You can't get it for her.
Okay. Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Dr.
You're welcome. Next question, folks.
Hello.
Mr. Khanna?
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Khanna, this is regarding the O-1 visa.
Guys, everybody has to call me Rajiv. I just refuse to answer to Mr. Khanna. I don't know. First of
all
right, Mr. Khanna sounds like my dad. And secondly,
sure, Rajiv.
When you guys
Rajiv.
Call me Mr. Khanna, I start expecting people to respect me. And then my own team says, hey, Rajiv, when they talk with me like that, I get very bitterly disappointed. So don't
right.
get me trained to wrong habits.
Sure, all right, sure. Rajiv, this is regarding the open question that I
had. See, I remember who you are, and
right.
you are the designer
right.
person.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know, currently I'm pursuing an MBA, and, you know, I'm planning to work on a few research papers in coordination with my classmates and probably my professors, and I was, reading online that journal papers which are, you know, research-based, which are published in, academic journals, do aid in terms of, showing some sort of scholarly ability.
It still is going to be difficult for you to get an O-1. For O-1, you pretty much have to have sustained almost national, international level acclaim, sustained. You know, it's something that, you've been, in other words, it's for the top 2, 3, 4, 5% people in the profession.
I see.
Okay. And please don't be offended, you're just very young to be at that level.
Right.
Some things are not necessarily linked to gray hair, but but they are more likely to come with gray. So when you start going gray, I think your chances for O-1 would increase.
Okay, great. So, currently I'm looking at taking up an H1 once I finish my education. But I was thinking in the long run, is there a possibility to move from H1 to O-1, if things change?
What is the advantage of moving to O-1?
Okay, there isn't.
There isn't.
Okay.
People
uh-huh.
could think that if I have an O-1, getting an EB-1 gets more likely. But really it's not necessary. You can apply for an EB-1 from H1 itself.
I see.
All right. Okay. So O-1 gives you absolutely no benefit. You know who needs O-1? People who 6 years are over. People who are on J-1, they can't get H-1. Okay.
Right.
These are the kind of people for whom we do O-1.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or people who have a quota problem.
I see. Okay.
So otherwise, every professional that I can think of, go for H-1. There's no need to go for O-1.
I see. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Good luck. Next question, folks.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is about the 140 interfiling.
Gigi, I remember your case, and basically the idea is one I-140 was filed concurrent with the 485, and then that got denied. But before that got denied, you had already sent in a request to attack the other I-142 to that 485, right?
Yes.
So I think that should work. I think that should work.
Well, can the interfiling be done even if the priority dates are not current?
Ouch. That's a good question. Let me think about this. I think it can.
It can?
I think it can be. Let me double check that for you. Okay. Let me see if anybody in my team knows that. Actually, when I do the conference call, I log myself out from the internet messenger. Give me a second. I'm going to see if I can lay my hands on somebody.
Because the denied 140 has a priority date of July 2004.
Okay, give me 1 second. Give me 1 second.
Okay.
My office, everybody is perpetually on lunch, it looks like. Okay, let me try somebody else. Okay, tell you what. Send me an email about this question from the contact us form.
Okay.
Just say, Rajiv, can we do an interfiling even when the priority date is not current? I'm pretty sure we can.
Okay.
Send me a question through the contact us form on immigration.com. And just say, I was in the conference call today and I needed this information, and we'll be able to find you that information. If we know it off the top of our heads, we'll be happy to share it with you.
Okay, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Anytime. Good luck. Next question, folks.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Rokon. Question number 18.
Remind me of
this
the contact.
Writ of manure.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So, wanted to check, usually after how long do we have to...
Let me ask you a question.
Right.
Is your name a Muslim name?
No.
Okay, good. Chances are that background investigation may be regarding your company, not you.
Right. So I've been, Rajiv, I've been talking to the senator office as well, and they have been sending letters to USCIS to expedite, I mean, probably to USCIS and FBI. And what they tell me is it most probably might be to do with your name itself, I mean, probably during their database search. I don't know, I mean, how they figure that out, but while I was talking to the senator office, that's what I got to know. I mean, looks like the check is based on your name. I mean, I'm not sure if they are true or not, but... that's at least is my understanding, and that's something I've been told by my employer as well, saying it could be a background check.
Yeah, but background check for you, unlikely. I suspect it could be the company.
Okay. Do you think the senator office might, by any chance, would know whether it would be a background or would it be a petitioner, I mean petitioner or the candidate background check? I mean, probably during their interaction with USCIS or even with FBI. I mean, I don't know. That's something I'm trying to figure out. Because accordingly, if that's the case, I'm just thinking even if I do another H-1 transfer, it might not help because it might go for another...
Yeah, if the background check is stuck on you, then you've got a problem. I think you should be able to... the congressman's office should at least be able to find out that about for you.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I mean, that's something they told me already, saying it looks like it's a background check on your name.
You can ask them to confirm it.
Right.
Simply because you are considering, your options, and it's very important. Don't say that you're going to file a lawsuit because a lot of congressmen may not want to get involved with something like that.
Right.
And really, they are not getting involved with the lawsuit.
Right.
But this is just mention that it's a very important point for you, and you want to make sure, because if you file to another employer, then you still have the same problem.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that's the thing initially I was considering. Probably I'll go with another employer because I wanted to travel back at least for some time. But right now I'm in a situation where I can't. If I go, then that's it. I mean, I have to wait until it's approved.
Yeah. Okay. Go back to the congressman and see what they say. Okay.
Right.
Hang on 1 second. Sumanji, are you here? Suman, press star 6. Suman, press star 6 to speak with me.
Yeah.
You're here, right?
I'm here.
Yeah, I had a question from a member of the community who wanted to know whether we can do I-140 interfiling if the priority date is not current. And you said it's not possible?
It's not possible.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Here's the situation. she had an I-140-485 combo. Before the I-140 got denied, she had another I-140 approved, and she sent in her request for I-140 interfiling. Now, USCIS has said this in various conferences and ALA liaison meetings, that if the second I-140 request is made while the first one is still alive and not denied, the 485 can be linked to the new case. But you're saying if the PD is not current, you can't even do that.
That's what we faced in the past, yes.
I think that's wrong. But, you know, if that's what you think the law is and this is the way they are proceeding. Okay, ma'am, you've got your information. So, you know, this is what our office thinks. But I would always double check and I would try anyway. I would take that that argument that, you know, how can you, as long as I made my request on time, the PD is not current, that's not my problem. Okay. But although, you know, I can see some kind of rationale in that too, because if the PD is not current, then the 485 cannot be filed through another employer also, or another I-140 also. So I don't know. Sumanji seems to think that we can't do it and we had this problem before. I'm not sure. Let your lawyers research and see what the current thinking of USCIS on this. Of course, I stand corrected. I thought that we could do it because a part of me feels that USCIS should be allowing those kind of interfilings, but it looks like they don't. Double check it. Confirm it. If you have something that you want to share with me, let me know. I always love to be educated more about what is going on. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. So you can hang up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Okay. Folks, anybody who wants to talk with me, fantastic.
Yeah. Rajiv, this is in continuation to that question on writ of mandamus.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So one more question is there any suggestion on any timeline after which we got to go with report of mandamus, or it's more like you can go any time?
You can go any time which is unreasonable. So
right.
Your case has been pending, what, 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year overall and in background.
What, did you file a premium processing, by the way?
What happened was initially it was regular.
Then you converted it to premium.
Yes.
Think it's worth it. I think you should think about writ of mandamus carefully. But remember, normally, a writ of mandamus is available only for the employer.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay? But
right.
If the employer is not going to join you, talk to
right.
a local lawyer. You still might be able to file because you are the person most harmed by it and
right.
you could have standing to sue.
Right. And another situation is like my employer is based off Texas, but I work in New York because of consulting the layered structure what we are following here.
Okay.
So does that make any difference? Because you were saying something about Washington, it might not work probably.
I don't like to file these kind of cases from Washington, D.C., simply because I find
right.
that the local court here is very predisposed towards respecting the government's position above
right.
and beyond what
right.
normally should be done by court.
Okay. And also, usually in these sort of cases, does the senator office involvement really help? I mean, yeah, I do understand they follow up the cases, but in terms of concluding the case, do they help?
They really can't do much.
Okay. And one more thing is, because I did a H-1 transfer and working on the portability, I don't know if my previous employer withdraw the H-1 petition, which is valid until 2011. Now, if he did, am I accumulating any unlawful presence here?
It's a very tricky situation. You need to talk to your lawyers.
Uh-huh.
I really can't address it in this much time that we have here.
Right.
Very tricky situation. There is argument for and against it.
Oh, okay.
When you have a situation like this, I'm very, very careful. You need to assess it very, very carefully, thoroughly.
Okay. So you suggest probably I talk to my...
Please talk to your lawyers. Have them assess the situation. Assuming
right.
the worst-case scenario that
right.
the H-1 has already been withdrawn, where do you stand?
Right, but doesn't that mean I can still continue to work on the portability thing because I have applied for the H-1 transfer, right? I mean, and I'm waiting for some decision.
As far as I know, yes.
Oh, okay. What I was asking was, am I accumulating any unlawful presence?
I don't know the answer to that question. There are so
many
variables.
Okay, you are saying.
I want you to sit down with your lawyers and go over the timeline of what happened very carefully.
Right, okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Folks, any other questions? Okay, anybody who has any questions, we have about 12 minutes. Go ahead and hit me with them.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Rajiv, this is Mani here. I have a follow-up question on my situation.
Yes.
I actually withdrew my 140.
Right.
And I just wanted to know that if I go to Ottawa for stamping, and if they, let's say, if they approve my, if they deny my F1, and in any case, if can I come back on H1 again after going there?
I don't see why not. The only way there could be a problem is if they revoke your H1 visa, okay? And they're supposed to do that. When you apply for any new visa, they're supposed to revoke the existing visas on the passport, but they hardly ever do that.
Okay, but I heard that, you know, many people have concurrently, they have many valid visas. Like
yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying the consulates tend to ignore this own rule. So you may not have any problem coming back. And if they do revoke it, you're always entitled to apply for a new H1 right away.
And can I use the same PIN 797 and get a new interview date and apply for the new H1 just in case if they cancel my H1?
Why not?
Okay, so it's not even if like I can take this chance and go next month and take my F1. Can I do that? I mean, is it a risk?
I think you can. From what you have described to me, I think you can. You already know the risks. There are of course risks attendant to it, but your rights are also clear to you. You can come back on H1. You can reapply the H1. I don't see any problem with any of that.
I can come back on H1 and then when the school starts, I can go out and come back on F1.
If they give you the F1 visa stamping, yes.
Yes. And if they don't give, I can come back on my H1. I mean, is it possible that I go to Canada and stuck there because they cancelled my H1 and just can't enter the United States?
It's certainly possible. That's one of the risks you take.
Okay. But, I mean, is it a reasonable risk?
I really cannot predict that. You know, with the government, who can predict what is reasonable and what is not?
Mm-hmm. But generally, I mean, is it possible?
You're asking me a question that I can't answer.
Okay.
I have no idea what's going to happen.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck to you. Folks, anybody has any questions?
Yeah, Rajiv, one more question. Rock on again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, regarding you also suggested probably if we are doing another transfer, doing a consular processing, how is that different? I mean, would that be using the previous petition?
You see, you are the person with the mandamus issue, right?
Right.
Okay. What you need to do is, mm-hmm. as you discuss your case with the lawyers, also find out what they think about the consular processing. I'll tell you why consular processing is appropriate in some cases.
Right.
You see, you can only do a change of status or transfer when you're already in full status.
Right, exactly.
When your old I-94 has expired, you're no longer in full status. You are in authorized period of stay.
Right.
So you can't transfer. You can only transfer through going through consular processing.
Okay. And that consular processing does not go by any quota or anything, right? I'm still good to go with the previous petitions.
That shouldn't be a problem. Quota should not be an issue for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck to you. All right, folks. Anybody has any questions? Very good.
Rajiv, this is Bob.
Yeah, Bob.
I applied my labor non-perm like March 2005.
Okay.
And then I applied another labor in the perm somewhere October 2005, which was approved, and I won 140 was also approved.
Same employer?
Same employer. And also, I changed my employer also. Right now, I'm in AC21.
Okay.
Can I use that PDF, that approved labor March 2005, even though it's not 140 approved?
Only if the I-140 is approved.
Oh, so I cannot make use of it, right?
Yes, sir, you cannot.
Okay.
Good luck. Folks, anybody else has any questions for me?
Rajiv, I had one more question. I've heard that when you go to Canada, sometimes they tell you that why did you come here, go back to India and get the stamp. Is it possible that...
They can always say that because... The reason is F1 visa is based upon partly your intention to go back to your home country.
Yes.
And it is the philosophy of the consulates that your home country consulates can best judge your intention.
Okay.
However, like I said when we spoke last time, that many, many people I know were able to get F1 visa stamping from Ottawa the first time around, even though they had never had an F1 before.
Okay. And if they ask, is there any reasoning I can give, like, why did I come to your
the
place?
The truth and nothing but the truth. It is convenient.
It is convenient. Thank you.
Oh, yes, that is the truth, right? That's why you are doing it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Folks, anybody else have any questions? Very good. Good talking with all of you, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye-bye.